A few days later, Bond had been summoned again to Tiger's underground hideout. "You will not, of course, repeat this," Tiger had said with a wicked smile, "but action in respect of the matter of which you are privately aware has been indefinitely postponed by the central authority." "Thank you for this private information," Bond had said. "But you do realize how your kindness of 3 weeks ago has greatly alleviated the international tension, particularly in relation to my country. My country would be immensely grateful if they knew of your personal generosity to me. Have I grounds for hoping for your further indulgence?" Bond had got used to the formalities of Oriental circumlocution, although he had not yet attained the refinements of Dicko's speech with Tiger, which included at least one four-letter word in each flowery sentence, and which caused Tiger much amusement. "Bondo-san, this implement which you wish to rent from us, in the most improbable event that it is made available, will command a very high price. As a fair trader, what has your country to offer in exchange for the full use of Magic 44? "We have a most important intelligence network in China, known as the Macau Blue Route. The fruits of this source would be placed entirely at your disposal." Melancholy settled over Tiger's massive face, but deep down in the Tartar eyes there was a wicked gleam. "I am very much afraid that I have bad news for you, Bondo-san. Blue Route has been penetrated by my organization almost since its inception. We already receive the entire fruits of that source. I could show you the files if you wish. We have simply renamed it Root Orange. And I admit that the material is very acceptable, but we already have it. What other goods had you in mind for exchange?" Bond had to laugh. The pride of Section J, and of M for that matter, the work, the expense, the danger of running the Blue Route, and at least 50% in aid of Japan. By God, his eyes were being opened on this trip. This news would put a fine cat among the pigeons at HQ. He said blandly, "We have many other commodities. Now that you have demonstrated the undoubted value of your implement, may I suggest that you name your price? I believe that you have something on your shelves that is of comparable value, perhaps material from a similar, though no doubt inferior, source that would be of equal importance in the defense of our country?" "Undoubtedly," said Bond staunchly. "But, my dear Tiger, would it not be a good idea, once your mind is made up, for you to pay a visit to London and inspect the shells for yourself? I'm sure my chief would be honored to receive you." "You do not possess full powers of negotiation?" "That would be impossible, my dear Tiger. Our security is such that even I have not full knowledge of all our merchandise. So far as I personally am concerned, I am only in a position to pass on to my chief the substance of what you say, or to render you any other personal services you might ask of me." For a moment, Tiger Tanaka looked thoughtful. He seemed to be turning Bond's last words over in his mind. Then he closed the interview with the invitation to a geisha restaurant, and Bond went off, with mixed feelings, to report to Melbourne and London what he had gleaned. In the room where he now sat after the geisha party, and where Tiger had just cheerfully threatened him with death, Tiger's heads snarled at him from the walls and gnashed at him from the floor. His ashtray was enclosed in a stuffed tiger's paw, and the chair in which he was sitting was upholstered in tiger's skin. Mr. Tanaka had been born in the year of the tiger, whereas Bond, as Tiger had taken much pleasure in telling him, had been born in the year of the rat. Bond took a deep drink of sake and said, "My dear Tiger, I would hate to put you to the inconvenience of having to remove me from the face of the earth. You mean that this time the cedar may not bow before the typhoon? So be it. This time you have my very topmost word of honor." Tiger pulled up a chair and faced Bond across the low drink table. He poured himself a liberal tot of Suntory and splashed in the soda. The sound of night traffic from the main Tokyo-Yokohama road came in from some way beyond the surrounding houses, only a few of which now showed Doll's House squares of yellow light. It was the end of September, but warm. It was 10 minutes to midnight. Tiger began talking in a soft voice. "In that case, my dear Bono-san, and since I know you to be a man of honour, except, of course, in matters affecting your country, which this does not, I will tell you quite an interesting story. This is how it is." He got out of his chair and sat down on the tatami and arranged himself in the lotus position. He was obviously more comfortable in this posture. He said, in an expository tone of voice, "Ever since the beginning of the era of Meiji, who you will know was the emperor who fathered the modernization and westernization of Japan from the beginning of his reign nearly 100 years ago, there have from time to time been foreigners who have come to this country and settled here. They have, for the most part, been cranks and scholars, and the European-born American Lafcadio Hearn, who became a Japanese citizen, is a very typical example. In general, they have been tolerated, usually with some amusement. So perhaps would a Japanese who bought a castle in the highlands of Scotland and who learned and spoke Gaelic with his neighbours and expressed unusual and often impertinent interest in Scottish folkways. If he went about his researches politely and peaceably, he would be dubbed an amiable eccentric. And so it has been with the Westerners who have settled and spent their lives in Japan, though occasionally, in time of war, as would no doubt be the case with our mythical Japanese in Scotland, they have been regarded as spies and suffered internment and hardship. Now, since the occupation, there have been many such settlers, the great majority of whom, as you can imagine, have been American. The Oriental way of life is particularly attractive to the American who wishes to escape from a culture which, I am sure you will agree, has become, to say the least of it, more and more unattractive except to the lower grades of the human species, to whom bad but plentiful food, shiny toys such as the automobile and the television, and the quick buck often dishonestly earned or earned in exchange for minimal labor or skills are the summum bonum, if you will allow the sentimental echo from my Oxford education. "I will," said Bond, "but is this not a picture of the life that is being officially encouraged in your own country?" Tiger Tanaka's face darkened perceptibly. "For the time being," he said with distaste, "we are being subjected to what I can best describe as the Scuola di Coca-Cola, baseball, amusement arcades, hot dogs, hideously large bosoms, neon lighting. These are the part of our payment for defeat in battle. They are the tepid tea of the way of life we know under the name of demokarazu. They are a frenzied denial of the official scapegoats for our defeat, a denial of the spirit of the samurai as expressed in the kamikaze, a denial of our ancestors, a denial of our gods. They are a despicable way of life." Tiger almost spat the words. "But, fortunately, they are also expendable and temporary. They have as much importance in the history of Japan as the life of a dragonfly." He paused. "But to return to my story, our American residents are of a sympathetic type, on a low level, of course. They enjoy the subservience, which I may say is only superficial, of our women. They enjoy the remaining strict patterns of our life, the symmetry compared with the chaos that reigns in America. They enjoy our simplicity, with its underlying hint of deep meaning, as expressed, for instance, in the tea ceremony, flower arrangements, no plays, none of which, of course, they understand. They also enjoy, because they have no ancestors and probably no family life worth speaking of, our veneration of the old and our worship of the past. For, in their impermanent world, they recognize these as permanent things, just as, in their ignorant and childish way, they admire the fictions of the Wild West and other American myths that have become known to them not through their education, of which they have none, but through television." "This is tough stuff, Tiger. I've got a lot of American friends who don't equate with what you're saying. Presumably you're talking of the lower-level GIs, second-generation Americans who are basically Irish or Germans or Czechs or Poles, who probably ought to be working in the fields or coal mines of their countries of origin instead of swaggering around a conquered country under the blessed coverlet of the Stars and Stripes with too much money to spend. I dare say they occasionally marry a Japanese girl and settle down here, but surely they pull up stumps pretty quickly. Our Tommies have done the same thing in Germany, but that's quite a different thing from the Lafcadio Hearns of the world." Tiger Tanaka bowed almost to the ground. "Forgive me, Bondo-san. Of course you are right, and I have been diverted from my story down most unworthy paths. I did not ask you here to pour out my innermost repugnance at the occupation of my country. This is, of course, repugnance against the fact of defeat. I apologize, and of course you are correct. are many cultured Americans who have taken up residence in this country and who are most valued citizens. You are right to correct me, for I have friends of this nature in the arts, the sciences, in literature, and they are indeed valued members of the community. I was, let us say, letting off steam. You understand? Of course, Tiger. My country has not been occupied for many centuries. The imposition of a new culture on an old one is something we have not suffered. I cannot imagine my reactions in the same circumstances. Much the same as yours, I expect. Please, go on with your story. Bond reached for the sake flask. It stood in a jar of warm water being heated over a slow flame from a charcoal burner. He filled his glass and drank. Tiger Tanaka rocked two or three times on his buttocks and the sides of his feet. He resumed. As I have said, there are a number of foreigners who have taken up residence in Japan, and for the most part, they are inoffensive eccentrics. But there is one such person who entered the country in January of this year, who has revealed himself to be an eccentric of the most devilish nature. This man is a monster. You may laugh, Bondo-san, but this man is no less than a fiend in human form. I have met many bad men in my time, Tiger, and generally they have been slightly mad. Is that the case in this instance? Very much the reverse. The calculated ingenuity of this man, his understanding of the psychology of my people, show him to be a man of quite outstanding genius. In the opinion of our highest scholars and savants, he is a scientific research worker and collector, probably unique in the history of the world. What does he collect? He collects death. Chapter 7. The Death Collector. James Bond smiled at this dramatic utterance. A collector of death? You mean he kills people?
No, Bondo-san. It is not as simple as that. He persuades, or rather entices people to kill themselves.
Tiger paused, the wide expanse of his brow furrowed.
No, that also is not being just. Let us just say that he provides an easy and attractive opportunity, a resort for people to do away with themselves. His present tally, in just under 6 months, is something over 500 Japanese.
Why don't you arrest him? Hang him?
Bondo-san, it is not as easy as that.
I had better begin at the beginning. In January of this year, they entered the country quite legally. A gentleman by the name of Dr. Guntram Shatterhand. He was accompanied by Frau Emmy Shatterhand, born de Bidon. They had Swiss passports, and the doctor described himself as a horticulturalist and botanist specializing in subtropical species. He carried high references from the Jardin des Plantes in Paris, Kew Gardens, and other authorities, but these were couched in rather nebulous terms. He quickly got in touch with the equivalent authorities in Japan and with experts in the Ministry of Agriculture, and these gentlemen were astonished and delighted to learn that Dr. Shatterhand was prepared to spend no less than £1 million on establishing an exotic garden or park in this country, which he would stock with a priceless collection of rare plants and shrubs from all over the world. These he would import at his own expense in a sufficient state of maturity to allow his park to be planted with the minimum of delay, an extremely expensive procedure if you know anything about horticulture.
I know nothing about it. Like the Texan millionaires who import fully grown palms and tropical shrubs from Florida.
Exactly. Well, the park was not to be open to the public, but would be freely available for study and research work by authorized Japanese experts. All right. A wonderful offer that was enthusiastically accepted by the government, who in return granted the good doctor a 10-year residence permit, a very rare privilege. Meanwhile, as a matter of routine, the immigration authorities made inquiries about the doctor through my department. Since I have no representative in Switzerland, I referred the matter to our friends of the CIA, and in due course he was given complete clearance. It appeared that he was of Swedish origin and was not widely known in Switzerland, where he only possessed the minimum requirements for residential status in the shape of two rooms in an apartment block in Lausanne. But his financial standing with the Union de Banque Suisse was grade one, which I understand requires you to be a millionaire many times over. Since money is almost the unique status symbol in Switzerland, his clearance by the Swiss was impeccable, though no information could be obtained about his standing as a botanist. Q and the Jardin des Plantes, on inquiry, referred to him as an enthusiastic amateur who had made valuable contributions to these institutions in the form of tropical and subtropical species collected for him by expeditions which he had financed. So, an interesting and financially sound citizen whose harmless pursuits would be of some benefit to Japan. Yes? Sounds like it. After travelling round the country in great style, the doctor took a fancy to a semi-ruined castle in Kyushu, our southern island. The castle was in an extremely remote corner of the coast, not far from Fukuoka, the principal prefecture of the island, and in ancient times it had been one of a line of castles facing the Tsushima Straits, the scene of the famous defeat of the Russian Navy. These castles were originally designed to repel attacks from the Korean mainland. Most of them had fallen into disrepair, but the one chosen by the doctor was a giant edifice that had been occupied until the last war by a rich and eccentric family of textile millionaires, and its monumental surrounding wall was just what the doctor required for the privacy of his undertaking. An army of builders and decorators moved in. Meanwhile, the plants ordered by the doctor began arriving from all over the world, and with a blanket customs clearance from the Ministry of... But an additional reason for the doctor's choice of site was that the property, which extends for some 500 acres, is highly volcanic and furnished with many geysers and fumaroles, which are common in Japan. These would provide, all the year round, the temperature needed for the successful propagation of these tropical shrubs, trees and plants from the equatorial zones. The doctor and his wife, who is, by the way, extremely ugly, moved into the castle with all speed and set about recruiting staff in the neighbourhood who would look after the establishment and its grounds. Here Tiger assumed a sorrowful face. And it was at this time that I should not have dismissed as fanciful certain reports that reached me from the chief of police at Fukuoka. These were to the effect that the doctor was recruiting his staff uniquely from former members of the Black Dragon Society.
And what might that be?
Have been, Tiger corrected him. The society was officially disbanded before the war, but in its heyday it was the most feared and powerful secret society in Japan. It consisted, originally, of the dregs of the Soshi, the unemployed samurai who were left high and dry after the Meiji Restoration of about 100 years ago, but it later recruited terrorists, gangsters, fascist politicos, cashiered officers from the Navy and Army, secret agents, soldiers of fortune and other riffraff, but also big men in industry and finance, and even the occasional cabinet minister who found Black Dragon support of much practical value when dirty work had to be done. And the odd thing is, though it does not seem so odd to me today, that the doctor should have chosen his site, leaving out its practical amenities, in just that corner of Japan that used to be the headquarters of the Black Dragons and has always been a hotbed of extremists. Toyama Mitsuru, the former head of the Black Dragons, came from Fukuoka, so did the anarchist Hirota, and Nakano, leader of the former Tōkai, or fascist group, in the Diet. It has always been a nest of scoundrels, this district, and it remains so today. These extreme sects never die out completely, as you have recently, my dear Bondasan, found in the resurgence of the Black Shirts in England, and this Dr. Shatterhand found no difficulty in collecting some 20 extremely tough and dangerous characters around him, all most correctly clothed as servants and gardeners, and, no doubt, perfectly good at their ostensible jobs. On one occasion, the prefect of police thought it his duty to make a courtesy call and give his distinguished inhabitant a word of caution, but the doctor dismissed the matter on the grounds that competent guards would be necessary to maintain his privacy and keep trespassers away from his valuable collection of plants. This seemed reasonable enough, and anyway the doctor appeared to be under high patronage in Tokyo. The prefect bowed himself out, much impressed with the lavish display of wealth in evidence in the heart of his poor province. Tiger Tanaka paused and poured out more sake for Bond and more Suntory for himself. Bond took the opportunity to ask just how dangerous this Black Dragon society had really been. Was it the equivalent of the Chinese Tongs? Much more powerful. You have heard of the Qingpeng and Hongpeng Tongs that were so much feared in China in the days of the Kuomintang, no? Well, the Black Dragons were 100 times worse. To have them on your heels was certain death. They were totally ruthless, and not out of any particular political conviction. They operated strictly for cash.
Well, under this doctor from Switzerland, have they done any harm yet?
Oh, no. They are nothing more than he says. Personal staff, at the worst, if you like, a bodyguard. No, the trouble is quite different, much more complex. You see, this man Shatterhand has created what I can only describe as a garden of death.
Bond raised his eyebrows.
Really, for the head of a national secret service, Tiger's metaphors were almost ridiculously dramatic. Tiger exploded his golden smile. Hondo-san, I can see from your face that you think I am either drunk or mad. Now listen. This Dr. Shatterhand has filled this famous park of his uniquely with poisonous vegetation, the lakes and streams with poisonous fish, and he has infested the place with snakes, scorpions, and poisonous spiders. He and this hideous wife of his are not harmed by these things, because whenever they leave the castle, he wears full suits of armor of the 17th century, and she wears some other kind of protective clothing. His workers are not harmed, because they wear rubber boots up to the knee, and maskers, that is, antiseptic gauze masks, such as many people in Japan wear over the mouth and nose to avoid infection or the spreading of infection. What a daft setup.
Tiger reached into the folds of the yukata he had changed into when they entered the house. He brought out several sheets of paper pinned together. He handed them over to Bond and said,
"Be patient. Do not judge what you do not understand. I know nothing of these poisonous plants, nor, I expect, do you. Here is a list of those that have so far been planted by this doctor, together with comments by our Ministry of Agriculture. Read it. Take your time. You will be interested to learn what charming vegetation grows on the surface of the globe."
Bond took the papers. The first page was a general note on vegetable poisons. There followed an annotated list. The papers bore the seal of the Ministry of Agriculture. This is what he read. The poisons listed fall into 6 main categories. 1. Deliriant. Symptoms, spectral illusions, delirium, dilated pupils, thirst and dryness, incoordination, then paralysis and spasms. 2. Inebriant. Symptoms, excitement of cerebral functions and of circulation, loss of coordination and muscular movements, double vision, then sleep and deep coma. 3. Convulsivant. Symptoms, intermittent spasms from head downwards, death from exhaustion, usually within 3 hours, or rapid recovery. 4. Depressant. Symptoms, vertigo, vomiting, abdominal pain, confused vision, convulsions, paralysis, fainting, sometimes asphyxia. 5. Asthenic. Symptoms, numbness, tingling mouth, abdominal pain, vertigo, vomiting, purging, delirium, paralysis, fainting. 6. Irritant. Symptoms, burning pain in throat and stomach, thirst, nausea, vomiting, death by shock, convulsions or exhaustion, or starvation by injury to throat or stomach. Specimens listed by Customs and Excise Department as imported by Dr. Guntram Shatterhand. Jamaica dogwood, fish poison tree, Piscidia erythrina, tree, 30 foot, white and blood-coloured flowers, inebriant, toxic principle, piscidine, West Indies. Nux vomica tree, poison nut, crow fig, cachita, Strychnos nux vomica, tree, 40 foot, smooth bark, attractive fruits which have bitter taste, greenish-white flowers, seeds, most poisonous part,
convulsivant. Toxic principle, strychnine, brucine. South India, Java. Guiana poison tree, Strychnos toxifera. Curare arrow poison taken from bark, creeper. Death within 1 hour from respiratory paralysis. Toxic principles, curare, strychnine, brucine, Guiana. St. Ignatius bean, Strychnos ignatii. Small tree, seeds yield brucine, convulsivant, Philippines. False upas tree, Strychnos tuti. Large climbing shrub, strychnine or brucine from leaf, seed, stem, or root bark, Java. East Indian snakewood, Strychnos colubrina, climbing tree, yields strychnine, brucine, convulsivant, Java, Timor. Ipecacuanha, Psychotria ipecacuanha, shrubby plant, depressant, toxic principle emetine from root, Brazil. White woolly combi bean, Gaboon arrow poison, Strophanthus hispidus, woody climber, 6 foot, toxic principle, strophanthin, insine, asthenic, West Africa. Ordeal tree, poison tangan, Tanginia venenifera, or cerebra tangan, small evergreen tree, 20 foot, fruit purplish, tinged with green, toxic principle, tanganine, cerberin, asthenic, Madagascar. Upas tree, Malay arrow poison tree, Antiaria toxicaria, jungle tree, 100 foot, before branches start. Wood, light, white, hard, milk-bearing, toxic principle antiarin from milky sap, asthenic, Java, Borneo, Sumatra, Philippines. Poison ivy, trailing poison oak, Rhus toxicodendron, climbing shrub, greenish-yellow flowers, stem contains milky juice, irritant, toxic principle, toxicodendral, USA. Yellow oleander, campanilla, bee stool tree, Thevetia peruviana, small tree, all parts can be fatally toxic, particularly fruit, pulse slows, vomiting, shock, Hawaii. Castor bean plant, Ricinus communis, seeds are source of castor oil, also contain toxic principle ricin, harmless if eaten. If it enters the circulation through scratch or abrasion, is fatal within 7 to 10 days. 1/100th of a milligram can kill a 200-pound man. Loss of appetite, emesis, purgation, delirium, collapse, and death. Hawaii, South America. Common oleander, Nerium indicum, evergreen shrub. The roots, bark, juice, flowers, and leaves, all fatally toxic, acts chiefly on the heart. Used in India as leprosy treatment, abortifacient, means of suicide. India, Hawaii. One death was due to the victims having eaten meat cooked over an open fire, spitted on a stick of oleander wood. Rosary pea, crab's eye, jacarity bean, Abrus precatorius, climbing shrub. Small, shiny red seeds, weight average 1.75 grains, used by Indian goldsmiths as weights. Seeds are ground down into a paste with a little cold water, made into small pointed cylinders. If these are inserted beneath skin of human or animal, death occurs within 4 hours. India, Hawaii. Jimson weed, Datura stramonium, variety of thorn apple plant, found in North Africa, India. Also, Ololuque, Datura metalloides, from Mexico, and Datura tatula from Central and South America. All three are hallucinatory. Datura stramonium's apples are smoked by Arabs and Swahilis, leaves eaten by East African Negroes, seeds added to hashish, and leaves to hemp by Bengalese Indians. Datura tatula was used as a truth drug by Zapotec Indians and courts of law. Addiction to toloache, a drink made from Datura tatula, causes chronic imbecility. Gloriosa superba, spectacularly beautiful climbing lily. Roots, stalks, leaves contain an acrid narcotic, superbine, as well as colchicine and choline. 3 grains of colchicine are fatal. Hawaii. Sandbox tree, Hura crepitans. Whole tree contains an active emetocathartic, used as fish poison in Brazil. Also contains crepitin, same group of poisons as ricin. Harmless if swallowed, must be taken into circulation through wound to be fatal. Death comes in 7 to 10 days, Central and South America. Pride of India, chinaberry tree, china tree, Melia azadirach, small tree, beautiful dark green leaves, lavender blossoms. Fruit contains toxic narcotic which attacks entire central nervous system, Hawaii, Central and South America. Physic nut, Jatropha coccus, bushy tree, raw seeds violently purgative, often fatal due to exhaustion, Caribbean. Mexican tuber, camotillo, wild potato, grows generally. According to Indian tradition, it is plucked during the waning of the moon. It is alleged to begin deadly action the same number of days after consumption as it was stored after being dug up. Toxic principle, solanin, Central and South America. Divine mushroom, Amanita mexicana, closely related to European fly agaric. Black mushroom, eaten fresh or steeped in warm milk, laced with agave spirits. Causes hypersensitivity of the skin surface, ultra-acute hearing and sight, then hallucinations of several hours, followed by deep melancholia. Active principle unknown. Central and South America. Bond finished his reading. He handed the papers back. He said, Dr. Shatterhand's garden is indeed a lovesome thing, God wot. And you have, of course, heard of the South American piranha fish. They can strip a whole horse to the bones in less than an hour. The scientific name is Serasalmus. The subspecies Natereri is the most voracious. Our good doctor has preferred these fish to our native goldfish for his lakes. You see what I mean? No, said Bond. Frankly, I don't. What's the object of the good doctor's exercise? Chapter 8. Slay it with flowers. It was 3 o'clock in the morning. The noise of the traffic to Yokohama had died. James Bond didn't feel tired. He was now totally absorbed in this extraordinary story of the Swiss doctor who, as Tiger had originally said, collected death. Tiger wasn't telling him this bizarre case history for his entertainment. There was going to come a moment of climax. What would that climax be? Tiger wiped his hand over his face. He said, Did you read a story in the evening edition of the Asahi today? It concerned a suicide. No. This was a young student, age 18, who had failed his examinations for the university for the second time. He lived in the suburbs of Tokyo. There was construction work on a new departamento, a department store, going on near where he lived. He went out of his room onto the site. A pile driver was at work, sinking the foundations. Suddenly, this youth broke through the surrounding workmen, and, as the pile came crashing down, laid his head on the block beneath it. What a ghastly business. Why? He had brought dishonor on his parents, his ancestors. This was his way of expiation. Suicide is a most unfortunate aspect of the Japanese way of life. Tiger paused. Or perhaps a most noble one. It depends how you look at it. That boy, and his family, will have gained great face in his neighborhood. You can't gain face from strawberry jam. Think again, Bando-san. Your posthumous VCs, for instance. They're not awarded for committing suicide after failing in an examination. We are not so demokarazu as you are. There was irony in Tiger's voice. Dishonor must be expunged, according to those of us who remain what you would describe as old-fashioned. There is no apology more sincere than the offering up of your own life. It is literally all you have to give. But even if this boy failed for the university, he could have gone for a lower standard of examination or a lower grade of college. As you know, we say blast, or perhaps a stronger word if we fail an examination in Britain, but we readjust our sights, or our parents do it for us, and we have another bash. We don't kill ourselves. It wouldn't occur to us. It would be dishonorable rather than honorable. It would be cowardly. A refusal to stand up to reverses, to life. And it would give great pain to our parents, and certainly no satisfaction to our ancestors. With us, it is different. And despite demokarazu, the parents of this youth will be rejoicing this evening, and their neighbors will be rejoicing with them. Honor is more important to us than life, more proud, more beautiful. Bond shrugged. Well, I just think that if the boy had the guts to do this thing, it was the waste of a perfectly good Japanese life. In fact, of course, this suicide business in Japan is nothing more than a form of hysteria, an expression of the streak of violence that seems to run all through the history of Japan. If you hold your own life so cheaply, it follows that you will hold others' lives even more cheaply. The other day, I saw a traffic accident at one of the main crossings. I don't know the name of it. It was a multiple affair, and there were bodies all over the place. The police came, but instead of concentrating on getting the wounded to hospital, insisted that they should lie where they were so that they could draw chalk lines around them and photograph them, presumably for use when the case came to court. "That is common practice," said Tiger indifferently. "We are much overpopulated. Abortion is legal. It is helping to solve one of our problems if a few extra people die in an automobile accident. But there is something in what you said earlier. Our word for suicide is jisatsu, literally self-murder, and although it is a violent solution to a personal problem, it carries no stigma as it would in your country. In fact, one of our most famous folk tales, known to all children, is the 47 Ronin, or bodyguards. Through their negligence, their lord, Asano, was assassinated. They swore to avenge him, and they did so. But then they came together at a place called Aku, and all committed seppuku to expiate their negligence. This is what you know as halakiri, which is a vulgar term meaning belly cutting. Today, at the time of the festival at the Aku shrine, special trains have to be laid on to accommodate the respectful pilgrims."
"Well, if you bring your children up on that sort of stuff, you can't expect them not to venerate the act of suicide."
"Just so," said Tiger proudly. 25,000 Japanese commit suicide every year. Only the bureaucrats regard that as a shameful statistic. And the more spectacular the suicide, the more warmly it is approved. Not long ago, a young student achieved great renown by trying to saw his own head off. Lovers link hands and throw themselves over the very high Kigon Falls at Nikko. The Mihara volcano on the island of Oshima is another favorite locale. People run down the roasting slope of the crater and hurl themselves, their shoes on fire, into the bubbling cauldron in its center. To combat this popular pastime, the interfering authorities have now opened, at great expense, a suicide prevention office on the peak. But always the wheels of the good old-fashioned railway train provide the most convenient guillotine. They have the merit of being self-operating. All you need to do is make a 4-foot jump."
"You're a bloodthirsty old bastard, Tiger. But what's all this lecture about, anyway? What's it got to do with friend Shatterhand and his pretty garden?"
"Everything, Bondo-san. Everything. You see, much against the good doctor's wishes, of course, his poison garden has become the most desirable site for suicides in the whole of Japan. It has everything. A ride in our famous Romance Express to Kyoto, a boat trip across our beautiful inland sea that is so full of Japanese history, a local train from the terminal harbor at Beppu to Fukuoka, and a walk or taxi drive along a beautiful coast to the awe-inspiring ramparts of this mysterious castle of death. Climb these, or smuggle yourself in on a provision cart, and then a last, delicious, ruminative walk, perhaps hand-in-hand with your lover, through the beautiful groves. And finally, the great gamble, the game of pachinko the Japanese love so much. Which ball will have your number on it? Will your death be easy or painful? Will a Russell's viper strike at your legs as you walk the silent, well-raked paths? Will some kindly, deadly dew fall upon you during the night as you rest under this or that gorgeous tree? Or will hunger or curiosity lead you to munch a handful of those red berries or pick one of those orange fruit? Of course, if you want to make it quick, there is always a bubbling, sulphurous fumarole at hand. In any one of those, the 1,000 degrees centigrade will allow you just enough time for one scream. The place is nothing more than a departamento of death. Its shelves laden with delicious packages of self-destruction, all given away for nothing. Can you not imagine that old and young flock there as if to a shrine? The police have erected a barricade across the road. Genuine visitors, botanists, and so on, have to show a pass, but the suicides fight their way to the shrine across the fields and marshes, scrabble at the great walls, break their nails to gain entrance. The good doctor is, of course, much dismayed. He has erected stern notices of warning with skulls and crossbones upon them. They act only as advertisements. He has even gone to the expense of flying one of those high helium balloons from the roof of his castle. The hanging streamers threaten trespassers with prosecution, but, alas for the doctor's precautions, the high balloon serves only to beckon. Here is death, it proclaims. Come and get it.
You're daft, Tiger. Why don't you arrest him? Burn the place down.
Arrest him for what? For presenting Japan with this unique collection of rare plants? Burn down a million-pound establishment belonging to a respected Gaijin resident? The man has done nothing wrong. If anyone is to blame, it is the Japanese people. It is true that he could exercise more careful surveillance, have his grounds more regularly patrolled, and it is certainly odd that when he has the ambulance called, the victims are always totally dead, and usually in the form of a bag of calcined bones fished out of one of the fumaroles. From the list I have shown you, one would have expected some to be only crippled or blinded. The Herr Doctor expresses himself as much puzzled. He suggests that in the cases of blindness or amnesia, the victims presumably fall into one of the fumaroles by mistake. Maybe. But, as I have said, his tally so far is over 500, and with the stream of publicity, more and more people will be attracted to the Castle of Death. We have got to put a stop to it.
And what steps have been taken so far?
Commissions of investigation have visited the doctor. They have been most courteously treated. The doctor has begged that something shall be done to protect him from these trespassers. He complains that they interfere with his work, break off precious boughs and pick valuable plants. He shows himself as entirely cooperative with any measures that can be suggested short of abandoning this project, which is so dear to his heart and so much appreciated by the Japanese specialists in botany and so forth. He has made a further, most generous offer. He is constructing a research department, to be manned by workers of his own choice, mark you, to extract the poisons from his shrubs and plants, and give the essences free to an appropriate medical research center. You will have noted that many of these poisons are valuable medicines in a diluted form.
But how has all this come on your plate?
Bond was now getting drowsy. It was 4 o'clock, and the horizon of jagged grey porcelain-shingled rooftops was lightening. He poured down the last of the sake. It had the flat taste of too much. It was time he was in bed. But Tiger was obviously obsessed with this lunatic business, and subtle, authentic glimpses of Japan were coming through the ridiculous nightmare story with its undertones of Poe, Le Fanu, Bram Stoker, Ambrose Bierce.